We are talking today with Robin Myers. Robin Myers is a United Church of Christ minister and a nationally known peace activist. For 20 years, he has been pastor of Mayflower Congregational Church in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. He is a syndicated columnist and an award-winning commentator for National Public Radio and has appeared on Dateline NBC, ABC World News Tonight, and The News Hour with Jim Lehrer. And he is here to talk about his new book, Why the Christian Right is Wrong, a minister's manifesto for taking back your faith, your flag, your future. Robin, thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Mike, pleasure to be on the program.
If you would begin, tell us what was the motivation in writing Why the Christian Right is Wrong?
Sure. Right after the re-election of President Bush, you may recall that there was a lot in the press about how moral values had swung the election to President Bush, and that's what exit polling showed. And I thought to myself, these moral values are not moral values I recognize. This is not a gospel I recognize. In fact, the behaviors and policies of the Bush administration have always struck me as the opposite of Christian moral values. So I was invited to give a speech down on the campus of the University of Oklahoma in November 2004. The people who had voted for Kerry were sort of in this clinically depressed state. And all these students were gathering on the campus for a little anti-Bush, anti-war rally. And I sat down in a coffee shop in Norman, Oklahoma, and sort of sketched out a very brief speech, 10 minutes long, about 1,400 words, on a piece of yellow legal pad. And sort of everything was just sort of flowing, because I was really quite, I thought maybe I was losing my mind at a very young age. Surely this administration could not claim Christian moral values in the way it was running the country or the way it had gotten us into this war. So I simply listed the things, sort of point by point, that I thought not only proved the Bush administration was not representing Christian moral values, but was in fact acting immorally. I gave the speech. We walked around the campus, sort of a little candlelight thing, very typical peace and justice rally like happened all over this country. But after it was over, a couple students came up and said, "Can I have a copy of the speech?" I said, "Sure." So I just gave them my notes. They apparently went home to their dorm rooms, typed it up on their computer, and started sending it out to their friends, their family members, their professors, anyone they thought needed a second opinion from a minister, no less, in a state as conservative as Oklahoma. What I didn't realize was happening was that this speech was becoming an internet phenomenon. I got 10 emails one day, then I got 20, then I got 30, then I started getting 50, 75, 100 emails every day from people all over the country who felt like this speech had given them sort of the language to express their frustrations about the very same things, that the world seemed upside down, that reality itself seemed to be choreographed all of a sudden. The war didn't seem moral to them. The tax cuts didn't seem moral to them. The environmental policy of the Bush administration didn't seem moral to them. So this sort of silent group of people out there took this speech and sent it to everyone in their address book, who sent it to everyone in their address book. And pretty soon, the university where I teach had to set up a special automated response mechanism to keep their server from crashing. For a while, I tried to answer all the letters personally, but that became impossible. And then a woman called me one night from New York City. She had this marvelous sort of elderly Jewish voice, you know, sounded like just a character. And she said, "Robin, you don't know me, but are you the person who wrote the speech?" I said, "Yes." And she said, "Are you really a minister?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Are you really from Oklahoma?" And I said, "Yes," to all three. And she said, "Well, you know, everywhere I'm going in New York City, people are talking about the speech." And she said, "I took it to read to a death row inmate that I visit, and I read it to him through the bars, and all during the speech he kept interrupting to say, 'Amen.'" And I thought, man, what a strange world that one can write down a speech in a coffee shop in Norman, Oklahoma, and it gets read to a death row inmate by this woman who turns out to be the literary agent for Barbara Kingsolver. So this thing, Mike, this thing has always had a life of its own. I had no plans to write this book. This book ended up being demanded of me, if you will, by people for whom it gave a voice to all this frustration, this angst, this indignation about the claims that this administration and its unholy alliance with the Christian right was somehow moving the the country in the right direction. Lots of people just feel like the gospel itself's been hijacked. Now, I'm not talking about just liberal people. I'm talking about people across the political spectrum and the theological spectrum. There are very conservative Christians who are now beginning to realize their Jesus has gotten hijacked as well. So I wrote the book very quickly by simply taking the speech, which is included in the first section of the book, and expanded on it line by line, turned it into a sort of manifesto for all the people in this country who need very concrete suggestions about what they can do to take the church back if they're in the church, or the country back if they're in the country, and that pretty much covers all of us.
So maybe you can define for us, what do you see as the Christian right?
Sure. This is, I define this very carefully in the book as this kind of theocratic, very power-hungry group of politically minded folk in the Christian right, like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and James Dobson and Jimmy Swaggart, some of these high-profile media preachers who have been saying outrageous things. I mean, they don't believe in the separation of church and state. They've made it clear that we should declare a war on the judiciary because the judiciary doesn't rule according to what they call biblical law. I mean, the idea, should we worry about the Christian right taking over the country, it's a little late for that. They already have. The question is, how do we take it back? The book is not written as a rant against all conservative Christians, because there are many fine, thoughtful conservative Christians in this country whose viewpoints and political views are not represented by this narrow group of people who've sort of teamed up with Karl Rove and company to reshape the country. But consider how outrageous are some of the statements made by the Christian right, by the leaders. Pat Robertson calls for the assassination of the duly elected leader of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez. This is a Christian minister advocating that we kill someone because we don't like his political views. James Dobson of Focus on the Family in Colorado Springs, most powerful sort of Christian family lobbying organization, calls duly elected judges in this country, most of them are Republicans, by the way, he calls them vermin in black robes. Particularly heinous term because that's what the Nazis called the Jews. I mean, this is really a fascist sort of mentality. Jimmy Swaggart, Pentecostal preacher from Baton Rouge, disgraced once for his dalliances with prostitutes, now back and saying to his congregation in a sermon that if a gay man looks at him the wrong way, he'll kill him and say God did it. Now, you know, with friends like these in the church, who needs enemies? We've got a war that certainly now has revealed itself to be a sort of an elaborate hoax. It had already been decided on, and then it was sold to the American people through a sort of labyrinth of lies. And now we continue to lie about both how it's going and what we're really trying to accomplish over there. Spreading democracy, we say. Actually, what we're doing is shoving that country into a horrible civil war, and we're killing and maiming tens of thousands of people. This is not what I think of as what Jesus, the Prince of Peace, would be cheering us on to do. Tax cuts have helped the wealthiest people in this country, but Jesus was a friend of the poor. We don't have a national health insurance plan anymore that covers everyone in this country, and yet Jesus was a healer of the sick. Always he had what the Catholics call a preferential option for the poor. This administration has a preferential option for the rich. It's the strong helping the strong get stronger.
So if I'm reading you right, then the Christian right that you're talking about it's in the leadership. It has moved into the leadership portion of a larger conservative Christian base.
That sort of high-profile, media-saturated wing of the conservative Christian movement in this country. Now, that's not to say a lot of their followers don't believe the same things, but that we've gotten to a point in this country, and we're so polarized now. Where I come from in Oklahoma, if you're a Democrat, people think you cannot be a Christian, and that if you are a Christian, you must be a Republican. And it simply astonishes people to hear me talk about Christian moral values which push me toward the Democratic side. And don't misunderstand me. The Democrats have made their share of mistakes, and I'm suffering the ineptness of the current leadership in the Democratic Party as much as anyone. However, it's patently absurd to say that the Republicans, who now run this country and have, you know, and own the all branches of government, sort of represent what Jesus would want. I mean, who would Jesus bomb? That should be more than just a rhetorical question. And we're in this netherworld again where an administration sort of choreographs reality for us while we watch American Idol, while we are amusing ourselves to death. We have this president and an administration who's masterful in sort of an Orwellian way. It's saying, all is well, you know, the coffins may be coming home, but we're not going to let you see them. Look away and keep on shopping. This is a very dangerous time in American history. I wrote this book as much as anything, to get people to wake up to the truth. The truth is often painful. It's what Bill Moyers called the fearsome truth, but it's really all that can save us now.
And do you believe this Christian right is leading the country or partners with the leadership in this country?
I actually think, you know, Bill Moyers made the statement that the delusional is no longer marginal in this country. He made this amazing statement that people who would once have been considered too strange to be seated at the in the halls of power, people who believe the apocalypse is coming, that the end of the world is coming, and certain people will be saved and other people will literally have their flesh melted off of them. These people who are determining environmental policy, for example, who probably aren't so upset about the deficit because they don't think the arc of history is long, these are the people now running the country. I mean, you know, I don't mind. I know lots of men like President Bush, who by the way, is an unrecovered alcoholic. I understand a lot of the problems he had as a child. I understand how he lived in the shadow of his father. I understand this from a sort of psychotherapeutic dynamic. I don't want him to be the president of the world's only superpower because the man shows every sign to me of being simply deluded, and he's surrounded by people who only give him only tell him the things he wants to hear. It's called groupthink. It's very, very dangerous. And his approach to dissenters is to call them unpatriotic or, as we now know, spy on them, try to destroy them. The Bush family has always destroyed its political enemies, from Willie Horton on up to the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. You may call that Machiavellian. You may call it just smart, hardball conservatism. Well, why would you call it Christian? The strangest thing to me is that we have somehow taken this brutal way of doing politics and we've brought Jesus in and said somehow it's okay with Jesus. What we're doing is in fact endorsed by God. Now, between you and me, if one talks to God, that's prayer. If God talks to you, that's schizophrenia. And some of the most dangerous episodes in human history have been perpetrated by people who believe they were acting on orders from God. I don't know what God they're talking about. I don't know what gospel they're talking about. And I certainly don't know what Jesus they're talking about.
Can you give us a sense for how many people you believe are within the Christian right?
Sure.
And also, is there a Christian left and a Christian center?
Sure. Good question. Well, I mean, the numbers vary about the Christian right, anywhere from 35 to 60 million, depending on who all you add in there. There are conservative Catholics, and there are other people who are secular but who buy into the agenda of the Christian right from a political standpoint. But it's a huge group of people, and Karl Rove has known that they are a crucial base to energize, which is why we trot out the Trojan horse gay marriage issue, to energize the base, win the election, and we don't talk about gay marriage anymore until the next election. So first of all, I think people in the church, even if they're against gay marriage, should realize how they're being manipulated on that issue. Now, is there a Christian left? Well, the media is starting to talk about the Christian left. Now, I really kind of wince at that label because we're already such a divided country that if we start talking now about a Christian left and a Christian right, you know, blue states, red states, liberal conservatives, saved, left behind. Here we are sort of lobbing, you know, rhetorical shells at one another across this divide where most Americans live. Most Americans are people of common sense and compassion, but they don't get spoken for. We need to come together and try to agree on all the things we can agree on, which represent the most important values, saving this planet, which we are destroying, getting rid of the deficit that's going to hang like a millstone around the necks of all of our kids. And most of all, if we want to survive in the near term, we've got to stop the cycle of violence that is being caused by the way the president's waging war on terrorism. The worldwide incidents of terrorism have more than doubled since the invasion and occupation of Iraq. So the president keeps telling us, we're protecting you. We're going to kill the bad guys over there before we have to kill them over here. By the way, that's hardly a Christian idea. Jesus said you had to break the cycle of violence, that you should never return evil for evil, and that if you did so, you would start what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. called a downward spiral. If anyone picks up the newspaper today or looks at the TV and doesn't realize we're in a downward spiral that has no good outcome, then that person's not hitting on all mental cylinders. So, is there a Christian left? Probably so, if you've got to call it that. Jim Wallace is in that group. Rabbi Michael Lerner's in that group. I'm in that group. But, you know, I don't know that we're that comfortable with the term Christian left. I would prefer just the term Christian, because if one goes back and reads the Sermon on the Mount, one will discover that Jesus was one of the great all-time liberals. How you could call Jesus a conservative after reading the Sermon on the Mount's hard for me to imagine. In fact, if the Christian right would stop ignoring the actual words of Jesus, those words would indict what they're up to in the world.
For those of us that haven't read the Bible, I have the gist of when I listen to, for instance, G.W. Bush or the ministers on the Pay to Get to Heaven channels, they tend to my memory, they tend to use the word God. And you're using the word Jesus. And I had the impression that the Old Testament kind of has one view of the world and the New Testament has a second view of the world. Aren't you guys really just interpreting or taking the portions of the Bible that support your viewpoints and then kind of going at each other?
Well, of course, you can do that. That's a very tempting thing to do. That is, you decide what your views are and then you go looking for the scriptures that support them. It's called eisegesis. That's the technical term for that. And people do it all the time. But look, the Christian right is obsessed with the Ten Commandments because they give us a view of God as lawgiver and judge. Do this, don't do that, or else. This is a God who punishes. This is a vengeful and wrathful God in many ways. But it's strange that the Christian right should be most interested in having the Ten Commandments carved on granite and put into the courthouse, when in fact these are the remnants of the artifacts of Jewish culture, the Hebrew scriptures. They might want to turn, since they are Christians, to the New Testament and read the Gospels, including the Sermon on the Mount, which is the most important sermon Jesus ever preached. It's the constitution of the Christian faith. And there they would find a very different image of God as the unconditional lover of all humanity, as an entity willing to forgive and continue to try to bring more and more people into the sort of arena of his love. I mean, it's an extraordinary, the parables that Jesus tells and the teachings of the Sermon on the Mount show us this infinitely patient, infinitely loving entity, which has the hairs on our heads numbered and knows apparently when a sparrow falls from the sky. Very different God than we're shown in the Old Testament, with the exception of the great Hebrew prophets like Amos and Micah. They were absolutely full of the same idea that God is quick to forgive, always loves, and always wants to bring the enemy out of the shadows and into conversation so that we don't simply do each other in through hatred and prejudice and fear. So I think we've simply lost the essence of our own tradition, and I'd sort of like to try to introduce the Christian right to the gospel again.
Do you have any idea how to make that happen?
Well, they could read the book for when they could read the book, but maybe they should read the Sermon on the Mount. For example, let's talk about the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are the poor. Pray for your enemies and those who persecute you. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, if a man strikes you on one cheek, turn also to him the other cheek. Never return evil for evil. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. There's an entirely different world view being opened up in the Sermon on the Mount, and it is, in essence, the opposite of the policies being pursued by the current administration, which claims to be so Christian. Can you imagine, talk about praying for enemies, that's praying for them, not taunting them. I mean, can you imagine Jesus saying to the Babylonians, for example, bring it on? Or standing by the Sea of Galilee and saying, either you're with us or you're with the Gentiles. I mean, he didn't carve up the world into us against them. That's what this administration does. It uses strategies of divide and conquer to pursue its empire-like behavior. Jesus kept saying, all these people you think are your enemies are really more like you than you realize. Talk to them. Bring them into the fold. Stop shooting at one another and start talking to one another. Start loving one another. That's the only hope the world has. Now, these two worldviews can't be reconciled. One of the interesting things is we live at this crucial juncture in American history, in world history, in fact, where either we're going to pursue the let's kill them before they kill us theology, and that is a theology that's wrapped up in God talk, or we're going to take seriously the words of Jesus in that one must always try to reconcile with the enemy, not kill the enemy or fear the enemy or loathe the enemy. That's the difference. This is like day and night. And strangely enough, an irreligious philosophy is being pursued with religious rhetoric, while the actual religious ideas, which have come to us through the centuries, we don't get to make them up as we go along, are we must wage peace. We must not wage war.
Is the Christian right movement in this country, is that being mirrored in other countries as well?
Well, I mean, I think there are conservative and what I even dare to call in the book fascist philosophies all over the world. Fascism just means, by the way, people think that's such a horrible word because it conjures up Nazis and the Holocaust, and it is an ugly word. But it really just means, as Mussolini told us, control of government by special interests, in our case by corporations, and either the silence or the blessing of the church, which is what we have in this country, and tactics to silence dissenters or impugn their patriotism or spy on them. And who did you ever think we'd have a debate in this country about whether we should torture people? I mean, we're having that debate. What's happening to us is that we are incrementally accepting the unacceptable. And no society, no culture or nation ever wakes up one day and says, hey, when did we become fascist? It happens gradually, and then when the reality dawns on them, they say, well, how did this happen? It happened one step at a time with usually religious overlayment or rhetoric. Sort of, God is on our side, we are killing the infidels. You know that our rhetoric and the rhetoric of Al-Qaeda is hauntingly similar in some ways. Each side thinks God's on their side. Each side calls the other the infidels, the heathens. And so what hope does that leave us? It leaves us no hope whatsoever. Breaking the cycle of violence is the only hope we have. We have to have a different policy toward the Palestinians. There needs to be a Palestinian state because everyone knows that is. And look what's happening as I sit here. There is almost open war again in the Middle East. We're not headed in the right direction. Lots of Americans know that, and they're frightened. But what's paradoxical is this fear then gets co-opted because fear is the friend of fascists everywhere. It's the most powerful way to manipulate human beings. And you notice that when the Supreme Court ruled against Guantanamo and the right of the president to hold the so-called enemy combatants there without any of the protections of our judicial system, you know what the president said? Well, it's a sad day when the courts turn killers loose on the streets. Now, that's the rhetoric of fascism. That is, be afraid, because our Constitution protects certain people and has certain standards, it will turn loose murderers and thieves and they'll get your family. They'll be out on the streets. Well, the truth of the matter is 80 to 90% of the people at Gitmo were innocent. And what we did at Guantanamo Bay is an insult to the American standard of justice and jurisprudence. Of what we did at Abu Ghraib will go down in history as the moment America lost its soul. I mean, I am a patriotic American. I love this country. On the 4th of July, I get misty-eyed like anybody else. But I am deeply, deeply worried about the direction that we're going. And as a minister of the gospel, I'm even more incensed that the Jesus whose philosophy I've taught and preached for almost 30 years now, has been turned upside down.
You just said that fear is the friend of fascism. Isn't it also the friend of fundamentalism as well?
Sure. And there are two things I believe about religion and when religion goes bad or how it goes bad. There are two ways I think it goes bad. One is anytime fear is used, fear of hell, especially fear of hell, anytime you frighten people into faith, you're doing something that's fundamentally irreligious. The second thing that I think makes religion go bad is when it becomes a closed circle. That is, when religion, when any religious system through creeds and doctrines closes down on itself, forms a closed circle so that some people are in and other people are out. The purpose of religion is always to move like concentric circles, expanding and bringing more and more people inside the love of God and love of neighbor. And you can do that if you're a Jew or a Muslim or a Christian or a Hindu or a Buddhist. There are many different paths to God. And I'm not the one to sit here and say only Christianity gets you to God. I think, in fact, that's a form of idolatry. And if you read the Gospels, I don't think there's any indication that Jesus ever intended to establish a kind of closed religious system where everyone had to be a Christian, a Christian, to get to heaven. These represent, I think, perversions of the religious impulse. And when it comes to fascism, I put in the last chapter of my book, Christian Fascism and the War on Reason, the 14 characteristics that a nation is going fascist, and they're very brief. They'll send a chill down the spine of your listeners. This is from Lawrence Britt, political scientist, and he published this a couple years ago in The Guardian. Number one, powerful and continuing nationalism. Number two, disdain for the recognition of human rights. Number three, identification of enemies and scapegoats as a unifying cause. Number four, supremacy of the military. Number five, rampant sexism. Number six, controlled mass media. Number seven, obsession with national security. Number eight, religion and government intertwined. Number nine, protection of corporate power. Number 10, suppression of labor power. Number 11, disdain for intellectuals and the arts. Number 12, obsession with crime and punishment. Number 13, rampant cronyism and corruption. You're doing a heck of a job, Brownie. And number 14, get this one, fraudulent elections, which we have now exported to Mexico. So I ask your listeners, which one of those characteristics that a country is going fascist is not both evident and ascendant in the United States of America? They all are.
So what would you like to see done here in the near future?
Well, first of all, I'd like people to turn off the TV, put down the remote, stop watching American Idol, stop being amused to death, and get themselves re-engaged in the political process, particularly young people. I'm a university professor, and I'm astonished that my students are so disengaged from politics. They're engaged to technology. They're listening to their, you know, their iPods and their cell phones, and they're kind of walking around in these little individual bubbles. But they're not paying attention to the lessons of Vietnam. They're not paying attention to what's happening to their future in terms of the deficit and the environment and Social Security. They need to be plugged into these things. So one of the things I've done in the book is in the last section I talk about things you can do, actual positive things, from very small things, because even small things can matter, up to if you feel called to commit acts of nonviolent civil disobedience and get arrested, do so. That has a great tradition in the church of doing things that you think your conscience calls you to do because the laws themselves have become unconscionable. So get off the couch. Get out of your own individual world, your own self-obsessions. You know, how do I look today? How popular am I? What's going on in the tabloids? What's going on in my love life? So all the things that American culture tells us to obsess over and start obsessing over important things. Politics may be an ugly business, but that's the system we have. That's how we make the future. And we, as Ramsey Clark said, should not be spectator sports. This is not a spectator sport. We're not spectators in the democratic experiment. We have to be players. And my book calls for people to play to win and take back the country and the church.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for spending time with us today.
My pleasure.
We have just been talking with Robin Myers. He is author of the new book, Why the Christian Right is Wrong, A Minister's Manifesto for Taking Back Your Faith, Your Flag, Your Future.